You're listening to The Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson, and for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be talking all things food and drink, and in the studio we have food and drink. I'm joined by my fellow presenter, Ollie Lloyd of Great British Chefs. Hi there, Ollie. This looks good, doesn't it?
It does,
right,
it does.
In front of us. I haven't had breakfast, which is I do normally. I'm joined by Jill, who I'm going to introduce in a minute. She hasn't had breakfast. And Jason, he hasn't had breakfast. So we're so pleased that the studio's full of cheese.
Yes, and alcohol.
Oh, yes. Well,
we'll come on to that.
That does make a change, doesn't it? So my guests today are Jill Hall, Butler's Farmhouse Cheese. Welcome, Jill. Thank you so much for bringing all these delights from Lancashire.
Thank you very much, and hello.
It's looking good. And Jason Barber, who's well known to us because he's won the Food Talk Show Awards on a couple of occasions, I think, from Black Cow Vodka.
Good morning.
Hi there. And we're going to have a really good update of how Black Cow's doing because... Very familiar. Well, I'm very familiar with it. You're not, are you, Ollie?
Well, I know it through reputation. I've seen it in various chefs' restaurants, but I have not actually
tasted it. No. Mm. It's a bit weird. You're going to have to taste that for breakfast. Sorry.
Lucky I've had breakfast.
It is lucky you've had breakfast. So, Jill, just tell us a little bit about Butler's Farmhouse Cheeses, because it is a real proper family company, isn't it? And has been for a couple of generations.
Yes, we're actually in our fourth generation now. So, it started in 1932 with my grandparents, and my parents took it over in 1969. So this means 50 years this year is the anniversary of my mum making Lancashire cheese, which is still our flagship.
That's phenomenal.
Variety.
And you're handing over, I suppose, more and more to Matthew and Daniel.
I am.
Are you allowing them?
I am allowing them because they bring a huge amount of energy. And also a connection with our younger consumers. So hopefully we've got a balance. We've got my mum who's 80, who still gives us the benefit of her wisdom once a week.
I bet she does.
We've got myself, who I think I work full time. Matthew and Daniel might argue that's not quite true. And they are very full time, because when you're in your 20s, you have an amazing ability to work 24 hours a day.
Mm. So Lancashire is a phenomenal cheese-making region. I think it's probably because it rains so much up there. I'm sorry about that, but it's true. But if you go right up into the hills there, the grass is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. And within 5 miles of our dairy, we've got all of the Lancashire cheese producers.
Mm,
so Lancashire is quite a big county, but actually we're all concentrated...
In one place.
At the foot of Beacon Fell.
Yeah. And when you go there, it's the most beautiful views as well, isn't it?
Yes, it's a Trough of Bowland area. So the Queen likes Trough of Bowland. It's her estate. And yes, you're right. We've got a lot of rain because of the Pennines and very good grass, and that makes good milk. And that's probably why we have such nice
great dairy.
Cheese.
And is it like a big family? I mean, you said that, you know, all these dairies are within 5 miles. Do you all get on, or is it, we're not going to discuss that on air?
We all have our own specialities. So we're known as the gourmet cheesemakers. So we're able to make the traditional Lancashire cheeses, which we all make, and more recently the Blacksticks blue cheese and the Kiddleton Ash goat's cheese. So our speciality becomes putting a cheese board together with all these different varieties. We've got Singleton's opposite the road from us, and their speciality is export. Mrs. Kirkham's, of course, is just down the road, and her speciality is unpasteurised Lancashire cheese.
Particularly Lancashire cheese.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're all specialising in Lancashire cheese, so we all do have that in common, and we're all completely friendly and able to share ingredients if we need to and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So when you go up to one of the dairies up there, you actually go in and there's still rooms packed full of cheeses maturing, and there's big fats where you're making it by hand. It's still like that.
We have actually moved on from when we used to store it in the bedroom at the farmhouse.
Yeah, so thank goodness for that.
It's not in the bedroom anymore. It is in a proper cheese store. So we have two or three cheese stores, one of which is a barn, which is the best place to make our rinded cheeses because it holds the temperature and the humidity naturally. And then we have a different maturing store for our soft cheese because it has to be matured naked. And the white rind.
A bit like Ollie.
Really?
Well, I don't know.
I thought that's when he's
just been to Morocco. He's all tanned and, hasn't he?
Relaxed.
Been on holiday and relaxed.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Well, we won't ask him what sort of beach he was on.
Exactly.
No, trust me, when you're in Morocco on the beach and you've got camels wandering around, it's not.
And
it's a Muslim country.
Ollie, we're moving on.
but the different cheese stores are for the right conditions for each cheese. So the white, mould ripened Kiddleton Ash, then it has to have a specific set of humidity and temperature conditions to mature it naked. And then the Lancashire, of course, is matured in the whole 20 kilogram truckle. Mm. And cheese likes cheese, so it likes
Love
to be with
word.
Its brothers and sisters.
Love that word, truckle. It's a good word, isn't it? Great. So you've brought some with us. I think probably if we were doing the right thing, we should probably start off with our goat's cheese. Do you want to tell us about that one?
So the goat's cheese,
Kiddleton Ash,
we introduced that in 2004. So it's not got quite the history that the traditional Lancashire has, but it's made with milk from our own goats. We've now got 1,000 of these beautiful little animals.
1,000 goats, wow.
Yeah, they produce about a tenth as much milk as cows, so you need to have quite a lot of them.
Hmm.
And the fresher the milk, the less goaty. If that makes sense.
Mm.
The smell,
yeah, it has
the
got
smell.
A very specific, yeah.
It's a much cleaner taste and you get a much fresher, still a goaty flavour, but a much fresher end result. Would you like to taste it?
I would love
Definitely.
To. Jason, are you going to have some as well?
I will.
That's for breakfast?
Yeah, I will have a little bit.
Obviously, you're a cheesemaker yourself, so I expect you to have some very good insights to this, Jason.
Well, I wouldn't be an expert on goats.
Hmm. So what you're trying to do then as a family is you're trying to create a whole cheese board, is what you're saying. Thank you very much.
Yes, we've become known as the gourmet cheesemakers, and that was in response to actually the chefs back in the early 2000s asking us to respond to consumer demand for French-style cheeses, but they didn't want to buy them from France. They wanted the provenance and the local food story.
Mm.
But they didn't actually want the hard territorial cheeses at that stage. They wanted to have the variety of the French-style cheeses.
So it's sort of consumer demand, really?
It was. At the beginning of the 2000s, it was demand from the chefs for their customers to get these French-style cheeses made locally.
Yeah. And again, in Lancashire, I don't think a lot of people realise there are some stunning restaurants there. So all peppered about. And they have, and for a very long time, not just recently, since it's been sort of fashionable, have been specialising in local produce, haven't they? And it's a big thing.
Yeah.
So Nigel Howarth in particular.
Yeah, Nigel's been a big supporter for Butler's Farmhouse Cheeses, and he actually, Nigel Howarth, Andrew Nutter, Simon Rimmer, they were the ones who helped us develop Black Sticks Blue, and they took it in its early stages and guided us to see how we should alter the recipe to make it just exactly what they wanted. And they still buy it now in quantities.
Jason, your thoughts on the goat's cheese?
Well,
you're having some more.
He's going to go straight in again. It's very nice, actually.
Mm. For me, I can tell it's goat's cheese, but as you say, it hasn't got
It's quite mild, isn't it?
It's really
It's not
nice.
Too strong on the goaty.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I understand nice. That. And it's really creamy. But you can tell it's goat's cheese, but in the nicest possible way, if that makes sense.
I'm
not describing that very well.
I think that it's mild because the milk is so fresh.
Mm.
And I think it's how the goats are kept. And if the goats are kept in very clean, hygienic,
happy goats,
dry conditions, they must be dry. They're quite fragile animals and they're quite fussy about how they're kept. So I know some people play music to them. We don't do that, but we do have them.
Techno, a bit of techno. It really brings out the flavour.
We do have buildings with automatic screens on the sides which go up and down with the weather so that you can keep them wind-free and just the right conditions. They are particularly fussy, but they're also really beautiful animals and really happy.
Yeah. So what have we got next? What would be the best thing to taste after a bit of goat's cheese?
I think I would probably be inclined to go on to the, you can taste the buttermilk, which is the same sort of recipe, but it's made with cow's milk. So this is our newest creation. It's a bit camembert-y.
So you said you had 1,000 goats. How many cows have you got?
We've got 600 cows.
Mm.
So obviously
that's
make...
really nice. Mm.
This buttermilk is made with cow's milk.
Don't like that.
Mm.
So we started developing that in 2014. It's taken us 5 years and it's only just getting launched. Marks and Spencers have it and Waitrose have it.
So that is really nice.
It's that new, and Booths as well have it. So it's been really quite difficult to get a French-style camembert as good as the French, because they are really good at camembert. Making
Absolutely.
Camembert.
Yeah, you're a bit of a cheese connoisseur.
Is that pasteurised?
It is pasteurised, yes.
Do you like that?
I think that's a fabulous cheese. I mean, it's got a really flavoursome rind, hasn't it? But again, it's not too strong in terms of...
It's tasty.
It's really tasty, really tasty.
The rind's been the hardest thing, because a lot of British camemberts are quite bitter and cardboardy on the rind. So getting that thin, delicate rind has been... The trickiest.
That is edible.
The trickiest thing. Mm. And I have to say, I have eaten an awful lot of buttermilk over the last few years to get it right.
Well, yeah. Thank you for taking a hit for the team.
But now,
well done, Jill.
Now it's a sibling for Black Sticks Blue and Kiliton Ash, and it's fully fledged to go out there.
So are we now going to... Should we have Black Sticks Blue or a bit of Lancashire? What will go first? A bit of Lancashire, I think.
I think so, because Black Sticks Blue has a stronger flavour. Mm. Even though this is matured for a year, it's a more rounded flavour.
I have to admit, Lancashire cheese is not my favourite cheese. Sorry about that, Jill.
So,
but I do love it cooked. I think it is fabulous hot. Mm. Why is that? Why do I think that?
So Lancashire cheese is made very different from other territorials. It's made with overnight curd. So we actually don't put very much starter culture in, and we leave the curd sitting in the vat overnight to grow its own acidity. That creates a different length of peptide chain in the curd and amino acid chains, and that breaks differently when you're melting it. So it melts very, very loosely. And you can't replicate that without doing this very slow 24-hour method.
So that is why Lancashire cheese is the best cheese to have on toast.
It's actually a technical reason.
There you go.
So when you say it melts very smoothly, as in so, does it? It's very so it's quite stringy in terms of its sort of.
I won't say stringy.
No, stringy, but in terms of when you pull apart the kind of the gooey.
It just melts evenly, I would say.
I think that's the right way to say it. It melts very loosely, so it's not like mozzarella. It's not indigestible like that. It's very, very fondue-y.
Mm. Yeah.
And it does melt very, very evenly. So the fat doesn't leak out like it can do with the cheddar, because, you know, cheddar is great for its own things. But for melting, a lot of cooks, even chefs, don't actually know the qualities of traditional Lancashire cheese for melting.
Mm. Very nice indeed.
It's delicious.
Can we go on to my favourite then?
You can.
Yes. So up in Lancashire, this is pretty well known, I would say. There's a few signature cheeses, is my personal opinion. So Kirkham's do very good Lancashire, don't they, to be fair? But this has always been one of the, I would say, signature cheeses up in Lancashire. Would you?
It's...
Been modest, Jill.
It was launched in 2004, and I would say it just keeps getting better and better, because it's so difficult to make. You've got an extra dimension of blue mould, and to understand how that plays out in the maturation of this cheese has been a real steep learning curve for us. So we feel we've had it perfected now, probably for the last 6 or 7 years, but I still feel it's just getting better and better every year.
And it's quite an orange colour. You've got some rind, and then you've got some vein running through it. How do you make, you know, how do you put the vein through when you're making cheese?
So we add the blue mould culture to the milk before we start, and then we pierce the cheese 2 days after we've made it to actually let the oxygen go in to let the blue mould grow. Without piercing it and without the oxygen, the blue veins wouldn't grow.
Mm. What do you think of that?
I love this cheese, and I think what's interesting is that if you look at this kind of blue cheese, or blue cheese in general, it's much more, if you look at what the supermarkets sell, it's more of a European category.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, I think, you know, as a business, you are trying to produce, you know, really high quality cheeses that are in some ways inspired by international flavours. And I think not enough people know how good some of the British blues are that are made. And this is just, I mean, it's a great example of one.
I think it's a lot of people still think blue, British blue, is just Stilton.
Agreed.
And that's made very differently.
which is delicious.
Absolutely.
It's a different cheese, isn't it?
It's not a soft, creamy, mild cheese. So sometimes we offer people a tasting and they say, I don't like blue cheese. And what they mean is that they don't like the more acidic blue cheeses. But when they taste a creamy one like this, they think it tastes, like you said, continental. And they really like it.
Jason, what's your views on those now you've sampled them? Because you do know quite a lot about cheese.
Well, my favourite two would be the two soft ones. But I do love a blue cheese. It seems to settle my stomach when I need to settle my stomach. The Lancashire, I can see it's better over, for me, over toast and melted.
Perfect.
Can
we have some more of that camembert? Because I really like that one.
I like the crumbly nature of the Lancashire. It's got, it's got a real depth to it.
The Blacksticks Blue actually is also...
Sorry, but it's just not my favourite.
A good one for melting.
Is it?
So chefs don't always realise, you think chefs know all things about food, but actually it melts really, really loosely because like the Lancashire, it's made with very little added starter.
Which one? The orange one?
Yes, the orange colour Blacksticks Blue.
So while you're cutting that, you've got a rather odd thing that you brought with you that I'm looking at the moment. I know we're way past Easter, but you brought these in. You've got two Easter eggs. What are they? Are they cheese eggs? I mean, they look like chocolate, but...
It's a cheese egg, it says on it. It's very clear what it is, isn't it?
I think so. Can I open one?
You can. Easter is over, but the eggs are still in date. We introduced the cheese eggs 3 years since, actually, and this year we extended the range. So the Blacksticks Blue was the first one.
Oh, they're solid.
They are. And then they pop out and you can put them onto a plate and you can eat them with the biscuits and the chutney.
Were you expecting them to be hollow? Because that would be quite difficult to do.
I know. And that's what I was thinking is a bit weird. So I've just opened the... it looks like an Easter egg from the outside. You open the package. It's half an egg, like an Easter egg, but it's solid. And then underneath, when you pull it out, there's a little bit of chutney and some biscuits. That's a great idea. Much nicer than chocolate Easter eggs, which generally are rubbish.
But I quite like the way that the food industry does gifting. There's always... I think Fever Tree did a whole series of, different types of gin and tonic stockings for Christmas. And there have been sort of, cheese, advent calendars. There have been, all sorts of different, like, crazy categories just going. And I think actually, if you're a foodie, it makes you smile. I mean, if you open that on
it would make you smile.
It would make you laugh. Yeah. And actually, part of it, that's part of the game, isn't it? So where did you sell these?
In Asda, in Sainsbury's, in Morrison, in Booths, in Ocado. So they were quite wide distribution. And what we found was mums were buying them for children because they wanted a non-sugar variant.
Interesting.
I'm not sure my children would have accepted that.
No.
I think mine would go for chocolate.
Mine are big fans of cheese.
Well, interesting theory.
What you said was very clear, which is mum were buying them in order to reduce sugar. It wasn't like children were eggs made of cheese.
Yeah. Now, you've also got here a Blacksticks Blue cheese shot, which is going to lead us nicely into Jason in a minute. So we've got a shot that looks like a drink. And then I've just opened it, and that's cheese. It's just cheese.
So the idea is to take Blacksticks Blue to new eaters in a new format so that we can introduce it in maybe a bit more accessible format. So what you do with the shot, you put it in the microwave for 30 seconds. Melt it, and then pour it over either your steak or some roasted vegetables, and it's an instant meal.
It's more of a cheese sauce.
It is. You could drink it like a shot.
If you've got steak, I'm quite partial to a steak, especially this time of the morning.
That makes more sense.
But, I
think you have to drink it.
One of the things I think that the food industry has been really good at, but I think sadly often it's the wrong parts of the food industry that are really good at, is messing around with packaging in order to attract people to try new things in new areas. But normally it's the massive FMCG businesses that find kind of ways to inspire people to eat the wrong things at the wrong time by making them fun. You know, I saw something on, you know, shareable biscuit packs the other day, you know, because people want to sit there and eat the whole packet by themselves in a little bag. It feels acceptable. You know, not what we need to lower obesity rates in this country. But actually, I think what's interesting is that, you know, look, cheese has a role, and you know, you look at the sort of people avoiding dairy and actually the need to get dairy in the system, you know, for, you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, bone growth and all sorts of stuff like that. Actually, you know, playing around with formats with quality cheese is actually a really good thing to do, because it will, you know, this would get a smile on a children's face. Sue was showing me a picture of a mouse saying something like yes to cheese.
It says no to chocolate, yes to cheese. Yeah. That's what it says on the side. Yes. Your kids will love that.
just coming back to your point, we are starting off with the very best cheese and making it accessible. Yeah, so we're not mixing it with anything else. It's just a mix purely of Black Sticks Blue and soft cheese.
In a mould.
Yeah. So there's nothing else there. So it's trying to help people to access really good quality cheese so that they're spending those calories and that cash in the best way possible.
Stuff that's not full of nasties is actually just quality cheese. Product. Yeah.
So if we move on to you, Jason.
Sad to leave cheese.
I know. So I'm really enjoying it. Hold on, let me just do this. You actually started a cheesemaker, didn't you?
My family are cheesemakers. Yeah, they're the oldest cheddar cheesemakers in the world. Yeah.
The oldest
cheddar cheesemakers in the world.
Joking. That's in terms of how old they are,
they're ancient, 200 and something. So the recipe goes back to about 1833.
Wow.
And they would have bacteria or starters, which are nearly 90 years old, back at base in the labs.
Yeah. So you grew up on the farm?
I did grow up on the farm. I still am a farmer as well. So, so I do the farming in the mornings and late at night, and then do the vodka during the day, basically.
So you brought up the family of cheesemakers, cows, you know, very much like Jill.
Yeah.
And then you got a bit cross about some of the waste that was going on. Have I got that simplifying things a little bit?
What drove me to drink in the first place is milking cows, I think. That's probably what drove me to it, yeah. Cows come in for a lot of stick, you know, that they're farting the world away.
They're wholly responsible for greenhouse gases, which is untrue, of course.
There's some different arguments against that, because there's less cows about now, but this, you know, the greenhouse gases are still rising. We've always used lactose. It may have been for fattening pigs and things. But now we turn those lactose into vodka, basically.
So just explain the cheese-making process. We have, you know, on the one hand, we've got, you know, the sort of curds, which form, and then the other hand, we've got whey. Could you just explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so my milk would go up to my family who make the cheese. They would then add a starter, because after they've pasteurised the milk at 78 degrees, they've killed all the bacteria, so they would then add in the bacteria. Then they would put in their rennet, and then the curds go off to make the cheese, and then you're left with the whey.
Which is the watery sort of stuff.
It's everything bar the curds, pretty much. Yep. So that whey would then get spun, so you take out any excess butter, and then you sieve out the baby powder, and then you're left with the lactose, which is a very smooth, very clean sugar. And then that would get brewed up into a beer and then distilled.
And that's what you do to make vodka. So yours is...
To make the smoothest vodka in the world, you want the smoothest, cleanest raw material, basically.
So is all vodka a beer sort of starter?
Yeah, so it would...
A starter
yeah,
a beer,
it would,
sorry.
Yeah, so if you were doing potatoes or wheat, you would bring it into a beer, and then it get to... varies from 3% to maybe 9% alcohol, and then you would distill it. So ours is distilled 3 times, the last time through copper.
So, did you realise that?
No.
So when you're describing beer, what you mean is that process of
it's where all that raw material has basically you've introduced your yeasts, and then it sort of brew it into a beer or a wine.
Yep.
And then you distill it from that, basically.
So, in terms of vodka, I'm going to ask Ollie this: most expensive bottle of vodka ever. How much do you reckon it cost?
What, that I've purchased?
No, not you, because you don't drink vodka.
No. I mean, I think, you know, the supermarket brand vodkas for about 13 quid. And I think they probably go out to about 100 and 150.
I will admit, I've never bought a bottle of vodka for 100 quid.
Most expensive bottle?
Ooh, I
just don't know. Ever. You know, one of these ridiculous things they've made.
Yeah, probably a 30, 35. Yeah.
£3.75 million.
Sue has two of them.
Really?
Utterly ridiculous,
that,
of course.
What's that made
so
from?
Triple distilled and filtered through ice, Nordic birch charcoal and sand from crushed gemstones.
Right, I can't
see the bottle is adorned by diamonds and solid gold labels, and when it's purchased, it's delivered by secure courier in white gloves.
Oh, well, there we go.
There you go. £3.75 million.
I suspect every oligarch
just
needs
get
one.
That, yeah.
I mean, you can't be an
utterly ridiculous.
Unless you have
scared
one.
To drink
utterly,
that.
Utterly ridiculous. Mm. Anyway, vodka is it's the purest alcohol in the world.
Yeah.
This means it has the fewest calories, actually, of any alcohol, and is the least likely to leave you with a hangover.
Have you tested
pure,
that?
No.
Have you tested that?
I
do.
Have.
You have.
Yeah.
It could, can you validate that as being true?
I could do. You could. I could do. We could do a night session and
no,
well,
we
come
could,
on the
we
next
could test
morning.
That. We could test that. I mean, I've tasted your vodka before quite a few times, and it does have a tiny little creamy edge, which I quite like. Would you like to pour Ollie one? Because he's never had one before.
I will. Now, how I recommend
what's the best
it
way
is
to serve it?
Over ice.
I always follow whatever instructions I'm
right,
given.
Quite right. I will change you for... What do you normally drink, then?
Everything.
I'm pretty... Well, I mean, whiskey, gin. I'm into
gin
Aperol
is,
at
gin
the
is a flavoured vodka.
Yeah.
So,
Aperol and tonic is my new thing.
Okay,
is that,
okay.
It's a bit girly.
It's not girly.
So what I would
look
try,
at the Me
if
Too
you
generation,
try...
pull that, Sue.
Right, here we go. If you try a little bit of our cheese as well, look.
Okay, oh, cheese with vodka. Would you recommend that?
Yeah, I'd very much say.
Really?
Dropping it everywhere.
Which bit would you?
I normally go cheese, vodka,
tequila.
Cheese.
It's like the tequila. You have the kind of.
Cheese, vodka, cheese,
exactly.
Really?
Yeah, no, that's how I do it. Well, that's so the sort of order we make it.
The way
so
you do
it's
breakfast in the morning.
It
so
is.
So if you had a.
So we
if
call
you
it dairyman, not a ploughman's lunch, but a dairyman's
dairy lunch.
Breakfast.
Mm. So if you had a cheese board, would you serve vodka, Jason?
I would. Do we have a few restaurants serve. It comes out with cheese in a little churn. What do you think?
It works really well.
It's
like
very
it.
Smooth.
It's a very smooth. It's funny as a drink because this is this. Yeah. What I'm about to say should not be used as evidence against me. But, you know, I think of vodka as a drink you drink early in your career.
Oh, right? Early in your career? Early in the
career.
Morning?
No, early in your career. Like, as in, right. Like, it's something you drink when you're sort of sub-18 to kind of 20.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I drank okay. Vodka in my
isn't
early
that cider?
Years.
That's because you're posh, though. See, if you're working well, class, okay, so. It's like cheap cider is what you do to start with. That's your entry level. But you went straight into vodka.
Yeah. I'm McEwen's export. No, I mean, I only think that because I was in Scotland the other day. And I saw, every time I see that, those red tins of McEwen's yeah. Export, it sort of takes me back. But that, I mean, that's really lovely and smooth. And
there's nothing offensive in that bottle. There's no burn, it's just a warmth. And that, because it's made from cheese, it sort of wants to go back with the minerals within cheese, is an old saying, corny but true, but if it grows together, it goes together. So it's picking up those minerals because it's very soft because everything in our vodka is milk. We don't add any mineral water from a bubbling brook or a peaceful wood or anything like that.
Where is your, where you didn't say
Jason
Parsby, where
one,
is your, where's your farm?
In Dorset.
In Dorset.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so it's a very smooth vodka and, yeah, I'll pour another one. Here
yep,
we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it's great for food pairing as well. There's one magazine named us the best vodka for food pairing because it is such a soft vodka. I mean, my favourite way, apart from having it with cheese over ice, would be with oysters.
So
you sort of have a little bit of Tabasco and lemon on the oyster and then fill up the shell with a bit of vodka and flim those down.
Caviar as well.
Caviar. The thing is with caviar, if you're spending a lot of money on caviar, the last thing you want to do is overpower the flavour of the caviar.
Do you get your caviar from Harrods as well?
I do, actually.
Sue actually regularly, the only person we know who shops at Harrods.
Last time I had caviar, I was in Harrods.
Yeah, of course it was.
But it wasn't
Sue
about
goes and gets some beef dripping there ago. Or something. We're still confused by it.
You're so horrible.
Well, you mentioned caviar, you know.
Yeah, but so. I do like caviar, but it's quite salty, and I don't think it would go with that, actually.
Well, the thing is, it's the saltiness, it's the brine. So in a dirty martini, makes the best martinis, but a dirty martini, it picks up that brine.
Now you just reminded me of something. Well, I lived in America for a while, and I remember being introduced by some sales guys when I was working at Unilever to something called the filthy martini.
Right, okay.
Which is a martini where the olive is stuffed with blue cheese.
Okay. Yeah. No, that would go very well.
Well, I mean,
it's clearly wrong, but maybe the black stick blue, you know, cow martini, maybe some kind of future. I'll leave it for you to experiment on.
Jill, what do you think of the vodka?
I'm actually really, really happy with it. I have never had vodka that I've liked before.
Right. There you go.
I've tried it with all the four cheeses. For me personally, it goes black really well with the cheddar, and it goes really well with the black sticks blue.
There you go.
Better than with the soft cheeses.
Yeah, I can.
And usually I would say that you would want a sweet wine, like a dessert wine, or a sweet sherry with the black sticks blue, because that makes it taste like chocolate. So that's what I would normally say to put with it. So whether this is a natural sweetness that complements it, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's got a vodka with a, it's got a creamy character. That's the only way you can say it. It doesn't taste of cream. It's got a character to it. And it is. It's a sweet, easy spirit.
I would say that really goes well, the black sticks blue, really nicely. You should serve that.
My martini idea is not the world's worst idea.
You should have some tastings, you know.
So every year we do a cocktail competition. And one year someone came in with, they did a Gorgonzola cheese wash with a pear infusion as a martini. That worked brilliantly. That's probably my favourite martini.
I'm not quite sure what I think about
I'm not sure what that is. The Gorgonzola had been washed.
Basically, yes. So they put the Gorgonzola in the vodka, and then you'd heat it up to about 56 degrees, leave it in there for about an hour. And then you put the vodka in the deep freeze. Then all the cheese would then go solid, and then you filter out the solids, and then you're left with a clear tasting, cheese tasting vodka. And then you mix that with something that pairs with the cheese. So in this case, it was pears. And it was amazing. Yeah.
Because you're a bit of a favorite with the chefs, aren't you? I've certainly seen your brand in, Mark Hicks's place.
Oh, right, yes.
Has it?
No, he does a filthy... So basically with the... Yes. A lot of people have a lot of fun with the names of the cocktails because it's, you know, cow. So he does a filthy cow martini. Yeah, so bit of fun.
Quite Mark Hicks.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Now, this is becoming more and more popular, and all credit to you because, you know, sort of first to do the world's first, literally, milk vodka. Are you doing flavours with it and stuff? Are you tempted to do that thing or are you just going to keep it pure? Because there are some pretty stupid vodka flavours.
Yeah,
there.
No, I've never bought a flavoured vodka in my life. No. And I was going to bring you up our first flavoured vodka. I had three bottles put back to bring up to you, but it was a long weekend. So I'm afraid I've drunk them.
How were they?
Yeah, no, we've just started now.
I like honesty. Honesty is
that's
really
quite
important.
Honest. Isn't it?
That, you know, because I'm not. If I want to go and have a flavored vodka, I'd normally go into a bar where they're going to flavor it for me because there's some great talented barmen out there, and they do it all fresh. So I've always sort of had my vodka flavored in that way. So. So we've done a strawberry vodka. We just add English strawberries.
Strawberries and milk.
And it went very well with ginger ale. It's a kind of a pimsy, kind of very summery drink, but I'm afraid I've drunk it all.
Do you think that will sort of... I mean, there's a lot of honesty and... authenticity about your brand and pureness. Do you think that's going to take away from that brand or do you feel you have to join in?
It's a different market. You wouldn't find the Savoy pouring a strawberry vodka.
No, no.
They're going to muddle the strawberries in themselves. But there's for someone, so it's going to be on sale in Sainsbury's at the end of the month. We've just done 10,000 bottles and see how they go.
Mm.
But in Sainsbury's where someone wants to have a flavoured vodka and an easy cocktail.
Why not compare?
It's easy. And it's going to be in some of the Green King pubs as well.
So I was looking up on the internet before the programme to see the worst vodka flavours I could find. Most American. Bacon vodka.
Oh, yeah. That's
blueberry pancake vodka.
Oh.
Buttered popcorn vodka. Dill pickle vodka.
Well, a bit more interesting. I mean, credit.
Fresh cut grass vodka.
No, thanks.
No.
I get the cow connection. That could be quite interesting, isn't it?
Wild salmon vodka. No. No, no, no.
No. But you see, the Nordics, I could see how...
And that's why, I know, but that's for me, it sort of slightly cheapens it a little bit. You've got to be really careful when you
But these are comedy vodkas, aren't they?
But then if you do, so occasionally I make a roast beef vodka. So when you cook the roast beef and then the juice in the bottom, you put that through the vodka, that in a Bloody Mary.
You see, I once made a whiskey, bacon whiskey.
Right.
It was the most disgusting thing I've ever made in my life. Now, let's be fair.
I trust
probably,
that you've made quite a few disgusting things.
I probably messed up the process. But, I mean, it was really foul. It was really foul. People still talk about it.
Right.
Not for the right reasons. No.
So, Jason, just to finish off the programme, what's your plans now for Black Cow? Because it's been a tremendous success.
It is. It is. It's basically getting it into as many people as possible. Mm. So like the cheese here, you've been around for a few years, not yourself, but the cheese. So we've still got to work on that. So this, it's last year we were in Morrison's and Sainsbury's and Majestic's and Obbins, but this year we're now in Tesco's, and they say 52% of all booze sold in the UK, not in a pub, is through Tesco's. So that would be quite important to us. Yep. And it's getting, so if we want to spend an advert, money on an advert, it's money well spent because it gets to more people.
Absolutely.
So it's getting it out there.
So it's just more and more distribution.
For us, yeah.
Jill, the future, the lads are taking over. Are you excited about that?
So obviously, yes. And Matthew's really keen to build the Black Sticks Blue brand. And like Jason, we've just got a listing in Tesco. So from June, it's available in every supermarket in the UK.
Wow.
Which is, it's 15 years old, is Black Sticks. So I can completely sympathise or empathise with you building a new brand. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
It's taken us 15 years to get Black Sticks Blue listed nationally everywhere.
And then all of a sudden somebody will say you're an overnight success, which is really annoying, isn't it?
Well, at least you've got the word success in there. But from the chefs discovering it in 2004 and still loving it and loving to cook with it, Black Sticks Blue is now going to be available to everybody through the supermarkets.
There we go.
But I think
you can buy a bottle of Black Cow and your cheese, and they can.
Should be a nice little pairing going.
Good weekend.
Exactly.
You've got those nice little miniatures that I sometimes buy of yours.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
No, you don't. You don't buy miniatures.
We do. We send them out to clients actually for little presents. Yeah, we do. They're good.
I'm a total convert. We do a lot of Christmas gifting. And I think Black Sticks Blue and that Black Cow. And
together.
Black, you've got a bit of an alliteration going on there. So Black Cow and Black Sticks, it sort of works for me.
I still like that camembert, though.
I tell you what I think is also interesting.
No, it's not a camembert. What was it?
It's Buttermill.
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 How long has Black Cow been going?
We sold our first bottle to Mark Hicks, actually, in 2012.
Yeah, so. I mean, this stuff takes time. I mean,
yes,
I know.
It does, yeah.
I think one of the things that often people forget is that you use the phrase "Sue overnight success," but just
there's
overnight
no
success.
Thing.
Well, I mean,
not
it happens
really.
In the internet. You have overnight fads,
yeah.
But actually, long-term success is built from stable foundations, and then different teams take stuff on, build things, evolve them, and that's the way they work.
And it's a huge amount of hard work, of course.
Yeah,
huge amount
and
of
luck
work.
And all the rest of it.
Mm.
And you have to keep your quality consistent all the way through.
Absolutely.
And I think sometimes it takes quite a few years at the beginning to actually stabilise your quality.
Nail it and make it consistent.
Mm.
Consistently. And I think that's where we've got to now, after all these years of Black Sticks Blue, we can safely say it's consistent. And I think that's a big thing in the supermarkets particularly.
Well, thank you very much. A bit of a revelation, cheese and vodka.
I find the Black Cow thing, there is not a bottle of vodka in my...
There will be now.
I think there might well be now.
There will be
there
now.
We go.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
so
it is a good vodka.
It is. Jason Barber, Black Cow Vodka. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank
really
you
kind of
us.
You, and thank you for bringing Ollie's first taste. And Jill Hall and the whole family, Butler's Farmhouse Cheese. Thank you very much for bringing the cheese today. It's very kind of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very nice. So you've been listening to the Food Talk Show, and we're syndicated to radio stations across the UK and further afield, as well as being available on Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, iTunes, and the podcast app on your phone. Thank you to my fellow presenter, Ollie Lloyd. That was great, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and vodka.
Lovely. And vodka. And if you want to recommend any future guests, someone doing something groundbreaking in the food sector, please get in touch with us via Twitter on @FoodTalkShow. Or if you want to listen to any of our hundreds of podcasts, go to Food Talk. I couldn't say that then. It's vodka. foodtalk.co.uk. Or via the Great British Chef's website. Have a great week. Bye.